Fasting is an essential part of the Christian life, but almost nobody fasts these days. How can we bring it back, and how can we get it so that we actually grow to love fasting? Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host of Crisis Point and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. So today I want to talk about fasting. Now, this might be, you might think it just has to do with the fact that we just began Lent, and that is definitely part of the reason I want to talk about this. But I think it also has to do with the fact that we live in a crazy world right now. I think we all know that. Obviously, we've had COVID and the COVID regime for the past 2 years. We have the war going over in Ukraine right now. We have the potential for World War III. We have the traditional Latin mass being suppressed in the Catholic Church, the only thing that's growing in the Catholic Church. We have a lot of craziness coming out of the Vatican. Clearly, the magazine name that we have, Crisis, is still applicable. And so in that situation, I think a lot of us can feel powerless. And I think a lot of us, frankly, are powerless. What I mean by that is there's nothing we can do to stop the war in Ukraine. There's nothing we can do to stop the ridiculous restrictions put on people because of COVID that fortunately are starting to die out a little bit for now. I think they'll probably come back next winter. There's nothing we can do to stop what's going on in the Vatican, the crazy stuff going on there. However, there is something that we actually can do, that we do have some power. What I mean by that is we can fast. We can pray and we can fast, because fasting is the most powerful weapon, in my opinion, that the Christian has. It is something we can actually do. It gives us, in a sense, power. I don't mean that in the secular way of power, the political power or something like that. I mean that in a spiritual sense of we actually can make change in the world. We can actually impact what's going on in the world through our prayer and fasting. But when I'm talking about fasting today, I'm not talking about just grudgingly going through fasting. I'm talking about actually growing to love fasting. Now, I will say that I get to this, the name of this podcast, How to Love Fasting, from this excellent book, To Love Fasting, The Monastic Experience. And it's by, I don't know how to pronounce this name, so I apologize, Adalbert de Vogue, I think, something like that. It was written in the 1980s. It's out of print now, and it's super expensive to buy. I think like the only copy they have at Amazon is like $145, and it's this tiny little book. I was able to pick it up for a lot less than that a couple years ago. But that's where I get the term to love fasting, that we don't just fast, but we actually end up loving fasting. Now, that might seem like, to a lot of people, a contradiction. Isn't fasting supposed to be hard and supposed to be difficult? And if so, how can you grow to love it? I will say that is both difficult, hard, but it is something that you can grow to love. Now, I used to hate fasting, and I'll still say I don't like enjoy it necessarily. I don't love it as much as I probably should. Maybe if I were a monk or something like that, maybe I'd love it more. But fasting is something that I used to hate. And I actually thought for a number of years that I couldn't do it. And I would go the bare minimum on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, the fasting that I would do, because I found it just too difficult. I would crash. I would be very irritable. I would get the shakes. All these things would happen to me when I tried to fast at all. But what happened is I discovered a number of things that led me to realize that fasting is both easier, bear with me on that part, but also more spiritually enriching if it's done correctly. And that's what I'm hoping to give some tips on that today. Now, first of all, now this might seem like a silly rhetorical question, but what is fasting? Unfortunately, it's not so silly in the world today, because we have lots of different things that we mean by fasting anymore. Because, for example, the Catholic Church, it defines fasting as having one full meal in a day and two other smaller meals which don't add up to a meal, and no snacking in between. It's almost like you need a flow chart to understand what the church means by fasting. But that's not fasting. Fasting means going without any food whatsoever, no calories. And specifically, really, when we're talking about fasting, we're not talking about like in between meals. We're talking about skipping meals altogether. One meal, two meal, three meals, days, weeks, whatever the case may be, of actually going without food when we normally would be eating. So no calories whatsoever. So when I talk about fasting, what I mean is basically a water fast. Now, some people do drink black coffee and certain types of tea, which have no calories, and that's fine if you do that. I don't drink those normally anyway, so I don't do those during a fast. I feel like in some ways, maybe the coffee particularly might be against the spirit of it, but I do understand caffeine addiction. I've had that before, and so you probably don't want to add giving up caffeine at the same fasting caffeine at the same time you're fasting from food. Now, so fasting then is, it's not abstinence. That's the other thing is abstinence is when we don't eat a certain type of food, but we eat other foods. So for example, the abstinence for meat on the Fridays of Lent that the Catholic Church requires. You can't eat meat on Fridays during Lent. And traditionally it was throughout the entire year, but now it's just during Lent. That's abstinence. So the church requires us to fast as they define it on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday only. And then to abstain from meat on the Fridays of Lent. Those are the only food restrictions that we have as Catholics today. Now, of course, it used to be much more rigorous than that. And I'll talk about the history of fasting in a little bit. But that's basically the basics of what the church requires. But what I'm talking about here is a much greater level of fasting, of actually skipping meals, more than one meal usually, and not eating anything, and not having any calories whatsoever. So that's what I'm talking about when I talk about fasting. Now, why is fasting so important? The first reason that the old desert fathers and the monks would talk about is that gluttony, the desert fathers would talk about gluttony as the first vice to overcome. Because if you think about it, what's our most essential need we have? Breathing's obviously the most essential need we have. We can't go without breathing in for a few seconds. We're not going to fast from breathing. But the most essential thing that we need that we have is really food. And water. If you go without food and water for any length of time, eventually you will die. And in fact, if you go without food for very long, eventually you will get weak and be unable to do your normal tasks. And so food is very important to us. It's central to our life. And so the Desert Father saw that gluttony, which is the abuse of food, letting food control you instead of you controlling food, since it got to this core need of ours, it allowed us to really be a basis for overcoming all the vices that we might have. If we can overcome gluttony, then we can overcome any vice. That's really how the Desert Fathers saw it. They saw that as the first one that you had to attack. And so fasting really becomes the prayer of the body, so to speak. That it's the way that when we pray, typically what we do is we pray in our heads or with our mouths, something like that, but we more praying intellectually or something like that, or spiritually. Well, fasting is like prayer of the body, where you're integrating your entire body into it. Now, there are a lot of health benefits to fasting, but I'm not going to focus on those here. I'm going to talk only about the spiritual benefits, how to practically do it, the physically how to do it, but how to make it, the reason we do it is for spiritual benefits, not for the physical benefits, which are legion. The other thing I do want to mention before I really get started here is I just want to have the one big, huge caveat that this is, when I talk about fasting, I'm not a medical doctor. First of all, pregnant women should not fast. They have needs for their little one. So I'm not talking to pregnant women here. Obviously, when you're not pregnant or nursing mother, the same thing applies. And I'm also saying that I want to make sure it's clear that there are certain people who might have medical conditions in which fasting is not advised. So I'd say if you think you might have one of those medical conditions, talk to your doctor, obviously. Now, I do think that a lot of people think they have medical reasons that they can't fast, but they actually can. But that's something between you and your doctor, not you and some podcaster. Okay, before we get into some of the practical details of tips on how to fast in our modern world. Let's talk a little bit though about the history of fasting, because I do think this is important. It really builds an important foundation for us understanding why we fast. Now, fasting goes back to even before the time of Christ. When we look at ancient Judaism, we see that they fasted. That they would call fast often, they would often call fasting in repentance of sin, but also to call on God to intervene in some way. They would call a fast for the entire assembly of the Israelites for God's assistance in something. Perhaps it was for an upcoming battle. Perhaps it was against a plague that was happening or anything of that nature. So you see why I'm talking about fasting being important right now. The ancient Israelites, if they were living today, I guarantee you they would call a fast. And in fact, Pope Francis did, for example, last Ash Wednesday, call a a day of prayer and fasting for Ukraine, peace in Ukraine. I personally thought it should have been done on a different day than Ash Wednesday, but at the same time, it is the same idea that we do fasting. So we do fasting for repentance of our personal sins. We do fasting in reparation for the sins of others. We also do fasting in intercession to ask God to come down and for him to act in this world. And so the ancient Israelites were the first to do, I mean, other religions do it too, but in our tradition, the ancient Israelites were the first to do it. Now, Christ assumed his followers would fast. He was challenged by the disciples of John the Baptist, I think by some Pharisees, saying that the disciples of John the Baptist fasted, the Pharisees fast, but the disciples of Jesus didn't fast. Why was that? And Jesus basically said, while the bridegroom is with you, we will not fast. But when the bridegroom is taken away, then you will fast. This is Matthew 9:15. In other words, Jesus, who is the bridegroom, when he is gone, which he is now, obviously he still is with us through the Eucharist, things like that. But when he's physically ascended into heaven, then we will go back to fasting again. So our Lord assumed we'd fast. Also in the Sermon on the Mount, he talks about when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites. Obviously, he's assuming that you're going to fast, that his disciples would fast. So that's another example of the Christian history. Now, the early Christians, they fasted on Wednesdays and Fridays. That was the way they fasted. In fact, the Jews fasted on, I think it was Tuesdays and Saturdays, something like that. But the early Christians, they fasted on Wednesdays and Fridays. The Didache, which is an early Christian writing, talked about this. But this was the standard practice of all Christians, was to fast on Wednesdays and Fridays. And also another thing that fasting in the early church is catechumens leading up to Easter Vigil, when they would be received into the church, they would fast in the days leading up to Easter. And those two things are actually still with us in a certain way, although they're really lost in most ways. The fasting on Wednesdays and Fridays, that has evolved into now four times a year on the Ember Days. And we're actually this week, I'm recording this on March 8th, 2022. This week is actually Ember Days, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. Four times a year in the traditional calendar, on Wednesday, Saturday, Friday, and Saturday, you have certain days of fasting and abstinence as well for vocations. In that case, that was kind of the Wednesday and Friday became those Ember Days four times a year. And then also the catechumen fast a few days leading up to Easter became Lent. It became the church's fast in the 40 days for all of us, because it's not just the catechumens who should fast leading up to Easter, but also all Christians. And that was kind of what all Christians did, was the Ember Days and Lent. Now, the monks, of course, took fasting much more seriously, and they embraced fasting, a fasting lifestyle, much more in depth, the early monks. And they had what's called the regular fast. That was the idea of only eating one meal a day, that every day they'd only eat one meal. Usually it was in the evening, just at the beginning. They would just eat one meal a day, and they'd fast the other hours of the day. Now, interesting, a lot of you might have heard of this, but there's actually now something called OMAD, staying for one meal a day. It's a health craze where people eat only one meal a day. And it's done for health reasons, not for spiritual reasons, but for health reasons. Well, the old monks, it's interesting because the old monks, a lot of times you hear them living to be over 100, like St. Anthony, the great desert father, the first desert father, he lived to be over 100. And you start to wonder if perhaps the monastic lifestyle that they had, even though it was so hard on the body, was actually a healthier lifestyle than we have today with our McDonald's and Coca-Cola and things like that. But anyway, they would fast. They'd have the regular fast, one meal a day. Over time, that regular meal started getting earlier and earlier. They couldn't really make it through the day. They had trouble doing that. And so they started to move it up. A lot of the monastic orders did. And then once you move it up too much, if you move it up to noon, for example, now you start getting hungry in the evening, they'd add a dinner as well. And so they start having two meals a day. And really, they had two meals a day for a very long time. In fact, most people ate only two meals a day for most of history. It was only in recent years, the past few hundred years, that we've added breakfast and started having three meals a day. And the monks started doing that too. And so now most monasteries eat three meals a day just like everybody else. And so really, this is the story of Christianity, is that when it comes to fasting, it's gotten weaker and weaker. And you see that also with what the church is called on for us to fast. Like I just said, what we do, what we call fasting, is really kind of a joke when you talk about real fasting. And that's something over time. That's not just something after Vatican II. The fact is that the church's requirements for lay people fasting has gotten progressively easier over the centuries, not just recently. So now it's rare, though, for anybody to fast very seriously. It's just not something you hear of very often in the Catholic world where people really fast. And let's be honest, most of us, we kind of show that we don't fast very much. I'm patting my tummy for those who can't see it, because I think most of us could stand to lose a few pounds because we don't really live a fasting lifestyle. Let's be honest. Now I do want to say, though, I don't think it's a case of fasting not being done today is just because we're all a bunch of lazy people who have no self-discipline. I actually think it's harder to fast today than it ever has been in the history of the world. I do believe that. I think it's harder for I'm talking about the Western world, particularly in America. It's harder for an American today to fast than for probably anybody, any other culture, any other time in the history of the world. And why do I say that? Because of our modern diet. Our modern diet that we're born into. We don't choose how we eat when we grow up. We don't choose how many times a day we eat, the foods we eat, or anything like that. But the fact is, our modern diet is antithetical to a fasting lifestyle. And that's for a couple reasons. First, we eat three meals a day. Most of us eat snacks between those meals as well. So a lot of us graze. In fact, I know there was a time where health people were actually saying it's better to graze throughout the day, eat throughout the day. That's not true. But we have that. But also, and most importantly, our food is awful. The food that we eat is awful, at least for trying to fast, because it's high carbs, high sugars, lots of sugars, lots of carbs. That is the exact opposite of what you should be doing when it comes to getting prepared to fast. Because what happens is when you eat things that are high carbs, high sugars, that stimulates your body to get hungry faster and to crash more quickly. It stimulates you to want to eat more. That's what's crazy about it, is you actually, the more high sugary things, high carb things you eat, the more you're going to want to eat. And so, and the less time you can go between meals. And so our modern diet of high carbs, high sugars, eating three meals a day, grazing a lot, all that stuff makes it a lot more difficult to fast. Plus, having food around all the time is also makes it hard to fast, because there's psychological aspects. I'll talk about this more in a minute. There's psychological aspects to eating, to hunger, to fasting, that are much more difficult today because we all have food all around us. I mean, it seems like the current world's trying maybe to go against that because we're trying to destroy our economy. But in general, most of us have food all around us. It's very easy. If I wanted to, I could just walk upstairs. I could grab some food out of the pantry and have something to eat right now. If I wanted to, I could also just drive a couple miles down the road. I could have Wendy's. I could have McDonald's. I could have Taco Bell, anything like that, just like that. I could go run to the local gas station, get a candy bar or something like that, ice cream or whatever. It's super easy. And that does make it more difficult to fast. Now, what I'm saying, though, is fasting should be hard. It should be challenging, but it should not be impossible to do with a Christian attitude during it. Because the problem is, if you eat a very high sugary, high carb diet, if you eat all the time, when you then try to fast, it's very possible that you will crash. That you will be very hangry, as they say. You'll get very angry, very upset, irritable, on edge because of your fasting. And that's not really what we're trying to do. Here's the example I give of when I say fasting should be difficult, but it shouldn't be impossible. Pretend that you're training for a marathon. I did this many years ago. I trained for a marathon many, many years ago and many, many pounds ago. When you train for a marathon, it's going to be difficult. When you go out for that 20-mile run, that 25-mile run, it's going to be hard. But you're still going to do it. The next day, you're going to be in a lot of pain. But you're not going to be like, okay, I can't do this anymore. It's more a matter of, yes, I have to just no pain, no gain. I have to fight through the pain and go ahead and do this. However, let's say you're on your 20-mile run and you get injured. Let's say you twist an ankle or you hurt your knee or something like that. Should you then continue to run? Of course not, because you're just going to make it worse. You're not going to actually be able to run the marathon. So it's like the difference there between pain and injury. Having pain can be good, and you can, and it's a good way you can have self-discipline. You can overcome it and you can still run the marathon. But if you have an injury, you really can't do that. And what I'm saying is that for a lot of people on a modern diet, trying to fast is like trying to train for a marathon with an injury, not with just your regular pain. But if you have a good diet, then when you fast, it will be difficult, just like training for a marathon is very difficult, but it won't be impossible. It will be something that you can do, and it will be actually something that will be beneficial to you. Just like when you go running, if you go run, do a 20-mile run, you'll get this runner's high. You won't have a lot of pain the next day, but you actually have rewards with it. And actual good fasting will be the same way. You'll have pain, you'll have some suffering, you'll have some difficulties, but you'll get rewards as well. And so we really want to overcome this modern lifestyle we have that's so antithetical to fasting, so that we can fast, because fasting is an essential part of the Christian life. Let me say that again. Fasting is an essential part of the Christian life. It's not a optional part of it. It's an essential part of it. Why is that? Because fasting does a number of things for us. First of all, it really shows us our radical dependence upon God. Think about it. We're so weak that if we don't put something in our mouth after a certain amount of time, we will eventually die. That's how much we depend upon God. That's how weak we are. We need God. We need Him to take care of us every single day. And so fasting reminds us of that, that hunger we have, that when we don't have food in our belly, we remember, oh, we really do depend on God. Another thing that does is it actually it frees our ability to do almsgiving. One of the things that a lot of times the monks, when they would fast during Lent, they would have more food to give out to the poor. And I think the same thing should be true for us. When you skip meals, you have extra money that you then can use to help the poor. And that is an essential part of fasting, is helping others with it. It also actually focuses the mind off the physical to the spiritual. And I know that sounds crazy. If you don't do it right, all you'll be thinking about is food. You won't be thinking about spiritual. That was my problem for years, is when I was fasting, all I thought about was food. But if it's done right, what it does is it changes your focus from the physical, like, okay, where am I going to eat next? Think about how much you think about food during an average day. Okay, when you get up in the morning, I need to get my coffee. I need to eat breakfast. 10 o'clock or so in the morning, like, oh, let me have a little snack right now. At lunchtime, noon, I need to eat again. Maybe have another snack in the afternoon. Then I eat dinner. Then maybe a late night snack. You're eating potentially six times during a day. Your day revolves around food. But if you fast, you're skipping meals, then you can start using that time to focus more on the spiritual life. Fasting also supercharges prayer. Fasting is a great way to really supercharge your prayer, to make it more powerful. All the saints and all the great spiritual advisors, directors have said this, that it's a great way to supercharge your prayer. As our Lord said, some things can only be driven out by prayer and fasting. Prayer alone isn't enough. And it helps us really to live a lifestyle that's not obsessed by food. Like I was saying, most of us, our entire day revolves around food. If we really think about it, food is the most important thing for us each day. When we remove that from the equation, we can think about other things, particularly the spiritual life. Okay, now, how do we actually fast? How do we go about fasting? The first thing I want to say is a prayer life is vital. It's the foundation of it. If you fast without praying, it's just a diet. It's not fasting. It's just a diet. So lots of people actually do fasting these days, intermittent fasting. Lots of secular people, I mean, non-Catholics, they'll do intermittent fasting, OMAD, things like that. That's a diet. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's sometimes it's good to go on a diet, but that's not fasting. It's not the same what I'm talking about when I talk about fasting. Another thing that's very important for fasting, we'll get some practical tips in here in a second, but one of the things you have to note is, if obviously prayer. Oh, and by the way, let me just go back to prayer. The spiritual directors say that for people who aren't in the religious life, praying 1 hour a day is really what you should be striving for. Try to spend 1 hour a day in prayer. If you're not praying at least 1 hour a day, work to get up to that point. Gradually add more prayer to each day till you're to an hour of prayer. And when I mean prayer, I mean like devoted just to prayer, no other distractions during that time. Also, though, what matters for fasting is what you eat when you're not fasting. That might seem a little paradoxical, but that's very important, that when you're not fasting, what you eat matters. And so that's another thing for when we're fasting. We're going to talk about that in a second. We also need to understand what hunger is, and we do need self-discipline. We need self-discipline at all times. I think one thing is, if you're not self-disciplined in any aspect of your life, fasting is going to be even more difficult. You have to start having disciplines. One way to do it, here's like a little example. Let me give two little examples of where you could add a little self-discipline. One would be, have your shower be a little colder than you normally do. When you take your shower in the morning, or whenever you take a shower, if it's a hot shower, make it a little cold. You don't have to make it freezing. Just make it a little colder. Make it a little colder. And then maybe it's even tepid. It's just a way of not satisfying your body in a very small way. Another way I would say is when you're at the, maybe you're at the dinner table with your family, take the worst portion. Maybe there's I don't know, some hamburgers out or something like that. Take the one that looks the worst. Maybe there's salmon out and take the one that doesn't look as appetizing, something like that. Maybe it's bacon. A couple pieces are burnt. Take the burnt pieces. Things like that are very small, but they help develop your self-discipline so that when you do up the game, so to speak, and go get into fasting, it's not something outside of the realm of possibility. You can actually engage in real fasting. So let's talk about some practical tips then for fasting, how we can actually fast and make it happen. So if you failed a lot in the past, here are some suggestions for making it happen, okay? So the first is change to a healthier diet. I've mentioned this a couple times already, but it is essential. If you eat a very high carb, high sugar diet, fasting is going to be darn near impossible. Maybe you could do it, but it's going to be very, very difficult, much more difficult than it should be. And you're going to be completely miserable the whole time that you're fasting. So when you're not fasting, have a more disciplined way of eating, a healthier diet, less carbs, less sugar. I'm not saying cut out all carbs or cut out all sugar. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying make it less so, particularly as you lead up to the days before a fast. So let's say you know you're going to fast this Friday. You're going to go, let's say, without breakfast, without lunch, you're just going to eat dinner. So you're going to go from dinner to dinner, a 24-hour fast this Friday. What should you do? I would recommend the day or two before the Wednesday, Thursday, particularly Thursday, cut out all carbs and sugar on those days. So don't have any carbs those 2 days or sugar, really the processed sugar I'm talking about, those 2 days, so that way your body will start to adapt and be a little better off for the fast. So that's one suggestion. But then in general, just less carbs, less high processed sugars. Also, stop grazing, stop eating snacks, just completely. This is outside of doing the fast. Just don't have snacks in between meals. When you eat, make it very purposeful, make it intentional that you sit down, you prepare your food, you sit down, you eat at the table. You're not just grabbing something out of the pantry and putting it in your mouth. You're not just swinging by the gas station to grab a snack. You're not just, stopping into going through the drive-thru at McDonald's. Try to avoid those type of things. Really make your meals intentional, because that will allow the fasting to be a lot more, much less of a change in lifestyle. If you're only eating 3 times a day, then dropping one of those or 2 of those or even 3 of those sometimes isn't as big a deal than if you're grazing all throughout the day. And that gets me to my next point, is understand what hunger is. Hunger is mostly psychological. Now, of course, I am not talking about those who are in true starvation situations and hunger, maybe people in Africa, something like that. I'm talking about us Westerners who have plenty of food. When you get hungry, your body doesn't actually need food more times than not. It's a psychological trigger. Because what's happening is, let's say you eat every morning at 7 a.m. When 7 a.m. rolls around, your body knows it's 7 a.m. It knows I usually eat now. So it sends a signal to your brain saying, hey, you need to eat now. And if you don't, it's going to give you a little bit of a pain and give you hunger pains because of the fact that you normally eat at this time. That doesn't mean you need food at that time, though. All it is just your body saying, I normally eat now. I'd like to eat now. But you can overcome that, because here's the secret of hunger: is it comes in waves. It's not constant. For those of you who hadn't fasted for a long time, an extended period before, you might not realize this, that when you get that hunger, if you don't satisfy it, the hunger actually goes away. It'll come back then. And sometimes it comes back hard. Sometimes it comes back a little easier, but it's not constant. It's not a constant hunger. Even if you fast for multiple days at a time, it's not that you're hungry the entire time. That hunger comes in ways, and there's ways to overcome that. One of them is actually to drink water when you get hungry. You'd be surprised by how much that just basically signals to your body, okay, it's fine. I don't need to be hungry right now. I mean, that's what happens. That's what I do a lot when a hunger wave comes on me. I just drink some water and it basically, it goes away. It's a more low level. Yes, you will get a low level hunger after a long fast that kind of stays with you, but that really hard hunger will come in waves, and you can a lot of times overcome that with water. Speaking of which, drink lots of water that's another tip of during fasting. Drink lots of water. I would suggest also something I do is you throw in a little Himalayan pink salt, a little no salt, which is potassium, and some magnesium. You throw that into the water. That gives you some of the minerals you need that you don't get the headaches, because dehydration is a real thing. And if you try to fast and you go without water, I just don't recommend it. I think you got to drink lots of water, put in those minerals, and I think that will keep the headaches from coming. Because the headaches really, that's just, it makes it difficult to do anything you're doing. It makes it difficult to work. If you're at home taking care of the kids, whatever the case may be, it's almost impossible with those hunger, with the dehydration headaches. So make sure you drink lots of water, put a little pink salt in there, a little no salt, potassium, a little magnesium as well. Also, I would suggest another practical tip is build up to your fasting. Don't try a 24-hour fast, for example, out of the gates. Build up to it. So for example, one thing you can do is just push your breakfast back. So let's say you do eat breakfast every morning at 7 a.m. Well, eat it at 8 a.m. one day. Eat it at 9 a.m. Maybe after a few more days, 10 a.m. Then eventually you get to the point where you just skip breakfast. And you won't even miss it. You'll be eating your first meal of the day will be lunch. Then you can do the same thing with lunch as well. You could get where this becomes a lifestyle where you do the monastic regular fast. You eat one meal a day. But even if you're not doing that, just when you first start getting really into fasting, I would say make it hurt some, make it a little bit difficult, but don't make it impossible. So if you've never fasted before, don't try a 24-hour fast the first day. What you want to do instead is start, maybe have just start 12 hours. That should be easy. Hopefully you can do that, but maybe a 16-hour fast. So if you eat at 6 o'clock the night before, it would be 16 hours. Go to 10 a.m. the next day, 16-hour fast. Do that with only water. And then you can just extend it, maybe an 18-hour fast, 20-hour fast. You'd be amazed by how quickly you can build up to a 24-hour fast. And even then, you can start thinking about a 40-hour fast. A 40-hour fast is a great fasting time, because basically you go from let's say Thursday evening to Saturday lunchtime. That's a great 40-hour fast that you can do, where you go 40 hours without, it's a very biblical number. You have 40 hours without food is a great way to do it, but build up to that. Don't jump right into it. Here's another practical tip I have. This one's the hardest one for me. This is the one that's the most important for me to do, because I find if I don't do this, I will have the hardest time with fasting. Stay busy. Stay focused on your work. Stay focused on activities. People sometimes think when you're fasting, you should actually pull back from activities. I recommend the opposite. Get more activities. Do more. Because what happens is when you're bored, your mind will get to food. You'll be thinking about your stomach. And if you're just kind of sitting around not doing anything, it's much more likely that you're going to be thinking, I need to eat now. However, if your mind is occupied with something, let's say your mind is occupied with work, for example, or physical activity, I think it's fine to do physical. I've always never had a problem doing physical activity while I'm fasting. Do physical activity as well. It's just something to get your mind off of what you're doing. Maybe you choose to do it on a Saturday when you have a ton of stuff to do around the house. That's a perfect way, I think, to do a fast, because your mind is thinking about, okay, I got to go clean this up. I got to clean up the garage. I got to go take this out. I got to mow the lawn, whatever the case may be. Your mind can be thinking of other things. And so it overcomes the psychological aspects of hunger, that idea that I need to eat now when I really don't have to. Also, another thing to do is avoid those conditional responses or change them. What I mean by that is, if you know that when you walk by the snack cabinet, that you want to grab something, that you automatically have this idea like, oh my, I got to eat that. You need to find a way to get around that. Either don't walk by the snack cabinet, or find something there. Maybe that's where you put your glass of water you grab, or something else. I don't know, something to keep you from that conditional response, because we're all like Pavlov's dogs. When we hear that bell ring, we're like, we're hungry. We got to eat. And the same thing is true for us when we walk by that snack cabinet or by the refrigerator or whatever it is for you. You're automatically going to think, oh, I need to eat. I need to eat. But you don't need to. So try to avoid those conditional responses. Also, avoid those activities that make you want to eat. I think the big one for us, for most of us, is watching television. When you're sitting a lot of us have the habit that when we sit in front of the television, we might have some chips or some popcorn or something like that. Well, if that's the case for you, don't do those things when you're fasting. Don't sit in front of the TV while you're fasting. First of all, you got better things to do with your life anyway. But second of all, it will keep you from that conditional response of, okay, I'm watching something. I need to eat something now. Also, I would say something as well is if you follow these. So those are some of my practical tips. Now, I do want to say I'm going to have a number of different resources I will put into the show notes. I don't have them in now. One is this To Love Fasting book. Like I said, it's very difficult to find this. But another thing is I wrote an article. My wife's written articles about this that are online. I will link to that. I have one just called To Love Fasting that I wrote 1 Peter 5. My wife wrote one for Crisis a number of years ago called The Fast Well Understand Hunger. Also, she wrote one on my own personal site called 12 Practical Tips to Make Fasting Spiritually and Physically Fruitful. So I will definitely link to those in the show notes so you can find them. Another book I would recommend is Jason Fung. He's kind of the expert on fasting, the complete guide to fasting. Now, he's not talking about this from a spiritual aspect. This is from a physical aspect, but it's great practical advice. The Complete Guide to Fasting by Jason Fung. I'd recommend that. Another book by a Catholic that has more of the Catholic view of it is by Jay Richards. He's been on this podcast before. He's a great guy. Eat, Fast, Feast. That's another book by Jay Richards. Eat, Fast, Feast. Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting. It's how science is validating an ancient practice. So definitely recommend this one as well. So do those things and follow some of my practical tips I gave as well here. And you can really start the fast. Now, here's the thing. What you will find is if you do this, if you fast like this, you will find it actually unlocks your energy. It unlocks your brain to serve God better. That's the difference I'm trying to talk about. When I used to fast in the past, I would get angry. I would get cranky. I would just be thinking only about food all the time. And when that happened, I'm not able to serve God. I would be tired, be lethargic. But once I realized how to fast well, how to have a good diet around it, how to have those minerals, drink a lot, how the psychological triggers, all those things. When I started to do it that way, I actually got more energy when I fasted. When I was fasting, I actually had more energy. When I said that thing about Saturday, do work around the house, when you're fasting, you actually find you'll do more work around the house. You'll have more energy than you normally have. That's what the crazy thing about it is. Also, the brain fog goes away. High carbs, high sugar diet, that's going to kill your brain. It's going to give you that brain fog. It opens up your brain so you can read spiritual works and get more out of them. You can pray more seriously because you have more focus. So these things are really that's why it's so important that we fast, that we really do fast, because it's done for others in a sense, because we fast in order to really intercede with God for the world and for other things. But it actually helps us personally as well. That's what's crazy about it, is it gives us more energy. It gives us more focus so that we can serve God better. So again, I will link to all the resources, but I would just encourage people to really fast, engage in a lifestyle of fasting, really, because that's the goal here, is this Lent, start, if you haven't fasted before or not much, or if you've fallen off the wagon, we all do it. I've done it just recently, in fact. And we get back into fasting, it can become an entire lifestyle. That's not just during Lent, but something that we do all the time. We can be offering up our fastings for others. It can allow us to really grow closer to God. So I just, you can tell probably that I'm excited about fasting, that I think it's important. And I would just urge everybody really to fast. We live in a crazy world. We live in a world that seems to be falling apart all around us, and we feel powerless. Well, here's something practically that we can do that really can make a difference. I would say, the holy man, the holy woman who is engaged in prayer and fasting is more powerful than President Biden, more powerful than President Putin. And so I really would encourage all of us to really engage in fasting in our own lifestyles. Okay, well, I'll wrap it up there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.